The year is 1990, and a killer is on the loose in Gainesville, Florida, a man who would murder five, all students. Without smartphones, the only information came through newspapers, TV, and radio. Over the span of 4 days, panic gripped the city and University of Florida. This is 4 days, five murders, and I'm Camille Respis. The man responsible for the nightmare is often remembered. And the victims' names?
Krista Lee Hoyt, Sonia Jane Larson, Tracy Inez Paulus, Christina Patricia Powell, and Manuel Ricardo Taboada
are painted on a memorial. Many pass by daily without knowing why it's there. Throughout this podcast, we will rarely mention the name Danny Rawling. But no matter what we do, his presence hangs like a specter over this project. In the coming episodes, we explore the trauma a moment in time can have on people and places, and how long a tragedy like this stays in a place like Gainesville.
She was driving off to head to Gainesville, packed up her little car, which held her whole life in it. And the flow came about me that I said, Trace, I have this feeling that you're going to go to Gainesville and I'm not going to see you again.
This is what Lori Leahy told her sister, Tracy Paulus, during a phone call in early August of 1990. Leahy was in Atlanta, Georgia, and called Paulus as her sister was preparing to leave her parents' house in Miami. She says she couldn't help blurting out her thoughts, and it made Paulus uneasy.
And she's like, what? Why do you say stuff like this to me? You're freaking me out. And I go, I don't know. And then she goes, stop it. I'm going to be fine. And we blew it off and off she went.
But Leahy couldn't have known her intuition would prove correct. Tracy Paulus and Manny Taboada's dead bodies were found at Gatorwood Apartments on August 28th, 1990. Taboada, a 23-year-old UF student with a lively spirit, was known as an upstanding guy. The South Florida native played football in high school and planned on getting a degree in architecture. Paulus was also a 23-year-old UF student and dreamed of being a lawyer. She was her high school's homecoming queen and salutatorian, and Paulus and Taboada were friends, both in high school and at UF. Paulus's loss was a blow to her sister Lori Leahy, as she jumped on a flight with her husband from Atlanta to Miami after finding out Tracy had been murdered.
I was wishing the plane would crash because I didn't want to continue living. She was my life.
Cameras from media outlets lined the street of her childhood home amidst a sea of cars when the two arrived. They snuck around the back of the house and met with Lori's parents. They embraced. They cried. When they entered the house, Lori opened the door and saw the faces of her loved ones, including some of Tracy's guy friends.
Each one of them there had been in love with her at one point in time, either when we were 7, 8, 12, 15, 20, whatever it was. And I got a nice interior chuckle about that because that's who she was.
Meanwhile, Taboada's friend, Servando Carriega, was also in Miami.
I had come home sick because I was running a fever. And it was a shitty rainy day. I remember I was asleep and my mother woke me up, called my cousin's husband, and they both came into the room, woke me up. She told me something happened to Manny. And I said, okay, what? Did he break his freaking arm again? Because he had recently busted a leg and he was somewhat accident prone. Then my mom told me, no, son, he was killed.
A memorial service was held at UF's Stephen O'Connell Center on September 5, 1990. Many in leadership at both UF and Santa Fe College spoke, including UF President John Lombardi.
Each of us must accept the loss and bear the pain of our grief as well as recognize the acute sense of sympathy that we all feel for the family and friends of these five students.
Thank you.
And 30 years later, the memories of the terror and tragedies from the fall of 1990 aren't known by everyone who lives in Gainesville now. But for those who knew and loved these five victims, the loss lingers, and the memories, they're fresh.
Okay, these are pictures when she was real little.
This is Sonia Larson's mother, Ada.
She had to wear glasses, and they were big at that time. Long hair and ponytail.
She's a petite woman with striking green eyes and bright blonde hair. As she describes her daughter, the 82-year-old mother returns to photo albums filled with memories of Sonia.
And that was the prom of 89. And I wasn't there, and I could kick myself.
Sonia Larson, the brunette beauty, had a loving spirit.
My daughter, Sonia, was very intelligent, very smart, very sweet. She had so many friends. They all loved her. And she was able to draw. Her artistic ability was phenomenal. She was just one beautiful person.
One of those friends was Mark Paul. He met Sonia Larson at church when they were in elementary school. Sonia's mother happened to be one of his Sunday school teachers. And Larson and him got close in middle school when they were in the same youth group.
She was unlike anybody I had ever met. I was kind of awkward as an early teenager until I started playing sports, and she didn't care about any of that. She just loved me for me.
Paul says his relationship with Larson was deeper than adolescent infatuation. She was also the first person outside his family to tell him she loved him.
It was just a sense of comfort and confidence in who she was, that she could kind of let love flow out of her without worrying about whether it was ever going to come back.
She clung to him when Paul was moving from South Florida to Georgia in 1987.
She just held on to me and said over and over again, I don't want you to go. I'll never forget it.
But then she was the one to go.
It was devastating.
Some days he cried, while others, he felt numb.
I just remember feeling like, okay, I've got my feet underneath me, and then a huge wave of grief would hit me, and everything would be knocked out from under me again.
30 years later, that sadness still exists.
It's a lifelong process. It's kind of like the biggest proof of love that there is, that you know we would carry sadness for somebody even after they've been gone for so long.
To Paul, Sonia brought magic to the world.
She was a light. That light got snuffed out, unfortunately, but not before it created a lasting impact in the lives that knew her and loved her.
He wishes she was here, but a piece of her lives on in his 16-year-old daughter, Sonia, who he named after his dear friend.
What's amazing is that she's very much like Sonia in a lot of ways. Free spirit, artistic. She's very funny. She's very affectionate.
And he's protective over his daughter.
When she wants to go walking out in the neighborhood with her friend, or she wants to go do this, and my wife has had to tell her, look, your dad's just not going to be comfortable with that because of the way he lost his best friend. And I think it just shakes you to your core. And so it just makes you more aware, more alert, more on edge. For good and for bad.
Paul was in pain when Larson died, but can't imagine what it's like for her mother. For Ada Larson, it makes her happy her daughter's friends think of Sonia.
No, I want her remembered. I want them all remembered. I don't think it should fade away.
But it doesn't take away from the grief.
I mean, there are times when, yeah, just as bad. You've learned to live with it, and you carry on, and there are other things happening. And so you put it out of your mind for a while, but it's always there.
And the Larson family had a special birthday tradition for Sonia.
Every year she blew out a candle, and then we burned it until the next age. Now it's stopped at 18.
Made jokes about our friendship, you know, well, there's one of them, where's the other one? Always together, never apart.
That's Allison Emery. She met Christy Powell in high school. They were both the new kids at the school. The two became best friends. They spent countless hours at the mall and countless ones on the phone, too.
There was a point where my mom called her mom and said, these girls cannot call each other anymore. You know, they can only talk for 15 minutes a day because I have a $500 phone bill here.
Emery says Powell was her first love, the first significant relationship outside her family. and she loved Powell's positivity.
I tend to be a little bit more of a pessimist and tend to take things really seriously and have the weight of the world on my shoulders. And she was always able to help me rise above all that and see the glass half full, not half empty.
Powell's outlook in life inspired her other friends, like Tanya Blazjowski. She met Powell in the summer of 1990 at UF, their first semester on campus, while walking to the showers at Tolbert Hall.
I was a very small town girl, and I knew she was going to be perfect to help me adjust to the bigger city life.
Powell became Blazjowski's protector and friend. They'd order ice cream at Baskin-Robbins at midnight and picnicked on the 4th of July. The two got close fast. Blazjowski even planned to room with Powell and Larson in the fall. And since Alice and Emery didn't go to UF, Powell and her were creating plans to see each other. But then, in August of 1990, Blazjowski and Emery lost Powell.
My safety net was gone.
I still can't even believe it all happened. It just doesn't seem real, even this many years later.
And Blazjowski wished she could alter one of her last encounters with Powell.
We were moving out of the dorm for the summer. I was helping her get all her stuff. We had the old-fashioned cameras. In the back of my mind, the voice said, like, stop and get a picture. But I didn't. Didn't do it. Because I never in a million years thought that that would be my last opportunity to do so.
Emery lived in a daze while at Vassar College in New York. But Powell's family would send her care packages and were a big support system. Meanwhile, Blazjowski was adjusting to life at UF.
I remember Century Tower for the first year rang the bell 5 times for the 5 victims. I tried not to listen to it, but the place I was staying on campus, you just couldn't help but hear it. And it just completely tore me up.
But even miles apart, Powell united her friends through a dream.
She told me and Allison exactly that she was so tired of the memorial services and the funerals and those types of things. And she was like, I'm so tired of them. And I'm so tired of everybody feeling sorry for me, she said. And she said, because I feel sorry for you guys that are left behind. Now she was in this beautiful maroon like robe. And she told me, besides, I sing in the Holy Choir. In the dream, Christy held out this thing that was kind of like a wreath, and we both held on to it. It's like you would see a picture flash a light, and you see like somebody taking a picture, and she was gone.
Blazjowski discussed these details in her dream interpretation class at UF, and the professor told her the wreath symbolizes a bond that cannot be broken. She also brought it up to Emery, and they talked about the similarities of their dreams. She even mentioned it to Patricia Powell.
Her mother said, oh, Christy loved to sing. And I can tell you, I just melted right then because I knew it was real. I know she's happy.
Both Blazjowski and Emery feel the dream helped heal their grief, but the sadness will always exist.
You'll learn to live with it, but you won't get over it.
Losing Powell made it hard for Blazjowski to establish close friendships, and it made Emery acknowledge evil in the world. But if she was alive, Emery can see Powell teasing her about marrying a mutual friend of theirs. It's hard to know who Powell would have been, but Emery has her suspicions.
I bet she'd be living in Jacksonville, raising a family, and throwing a party every Saturday in the fall to watch the Gators play football. I remember taking her out and trying to teach her how to drive the car, which was kind of scary, I guess, the first time or two, because she was so scared.
That's Krista Hoyt's stepmother, Diana. Krista moved in with Diana Hoyt while she was in middle school. The now 76-year-old remembers those times fondly.
I remember she wanted me to make her a prom dress for her first prom. And so we went down to the fabric shop and looked at patterns and we looked at material.
But one of Hoyt's favorite memories is Krista telling each family member goodnight.
And this would be 3 or 4 times that she would come by and give you a hug and kiss and tell you goodnight again. So to me, I remember that as being something really special with her because that meant a lot for somebody that age to be sure that they went to every member of the family and told them goodnight like that.
Her nickname in school was Glowworm because of her warm spirit. The petite brunette with blue-violet eyes always had a smile on her face and was constantly working to improve herself.
she only wanted straight A's. And if she accidentally got an A minus or a B, she would sit down and cry over it. You would just see, oh, there was tears. You go, Crystal, what's wrong? I don't know. I don't think I did very good on this test. And of course she did.
She was vibrant, giving, and empathetic.
She had a strong personality, but yet she was not a forceful person.
She was also known for her loving heart. For instance, Hoyt remembers a letter Krista wrote in college, upset about a disagreement she had with her father, Gary.
Krista had a special bond with her father. And I remember she had written in college, a professor gave me the letter afterwards about how she and her father had had an argument like all young girls do. And that both of them had said things in anger and haste. And she said later she thought about it and she thought, what if that would have been the last words I ever said to my father? She says, so I don't want that to be happening again. I want to remember this and always have the last words as something loving.
Krista's father struggled with losing his little girl. He worked for Bell South for 35 years and was informed of his daughter's death while at work. He retired soon after as he couldn't face returning to the tragic memory daily. Meanwhile, Diana Hoyt went to meetings related to the murder to help her husband.
At the time of the trial, it was on courtroom TV and Gary watched it. There were many things that came out during the trial that we did not know or understand or realize or had really sunk in. And he watched that and he collapsed at home.
Gary would develop a heart disease called cardiomyopathy. He died within 10 years of losing his daughter.
So the 10 years between Krista's death and that time was more than he could take. That was his limit.
Diana Hoyt, still alive, thinks about her stepdaughter every day.
As time goes by, you learn to deal with it. The edge is taken off. Not that you ever forget. Not that you don't sit down and cry for her. Not that you don't miss her or think about what would she be doing right now.
And Diana wants people to remember Krista, the sweet, vibrant woman.
It's with sweet sorrow or something like that every year that we have a major anniversary.
In Lori Leahy's house is a picture. It's known as the moment. The moment when her sister Tracy Paulus won homecoming queen in high school.
That night, I invited everybody that I knew in our neighborhood and my family and all this, and we had this monster crowd out there. Well, I just couldn't sit still and stood by the railing and just kind of waited and waited. And one of Tracy's very good friends was in student council also and had tallied up the votes. Well, she had looked at me as I was standing next to my other friends, and they're much older, and he had a camera, and she looked at me and she just went, "She got it." And I was shocked, and I hit Gary, the guy, and I hit him, and I said, "She got it."
The moment was one of the best days of Leahy's life.
So he immediately took the camera and put it on her and my brother's face. And my brother, oh, I forgot, my brother flew in from the Navy, and he wore his Navy whites, and it's called The Moment, the picture.
Leahy was jumping up and down, ecstatic for her sister. She puts Paulus on a pedestal, despite being 2 years older than her sister. She admired her sister's patience and kindness. She was also a big fan of her goofiness, like during a state homecoming queen contest.
She's practicing this cheerleading wave. We're just doing all this stuff. But after she came back and told me that she had to go to different stations and do all these interviews, and I said, well, you know, when they asked you, she goes, well, they asked me what I want to be when I grow up. It's like, I don't know. I'm just going to go to college. So she basically told every person that she went to see something different. Whatever came out of her mind, I'm going to be a brain surgeon. I'm going to run NASA. Each time she went away, she just came up with some cockamamie idea each time just to screw with them, basically, you know, because like, who knows what they're going to be when you're a senior going into college. So she came up with one thing after another and came back and we cracked up about it.
The two grew up sharing a room with a bunk bed. Tracy would fall off the top bunk and the siblings would end up sleeping on the bottom bed together. Leahy says her sister was loved by many and wanted to be a lawyer, but she never got the chance.
My mother answered the phone, my sweet mom. She goes, "Lori, you've lost your baby. You've lost your baby."
And now, both Leahy and her parents have a tendency to look out for others instead of themselves.
It's just my way to distract from what's happening inside. And my mom and dad do the same thing, especially my mom. She worries about me and how I'm handling my life and my kids and my grief.
Leahy thought having a baby would help her family heal from the tragedy. Within 3 years, she got pregnant and gave her daughter a name Paulus came up with before she died.
Taylor saved a community in a sense. I know that sounds kind of creepy, or not creepy, crazy, but it is. She did. She made a lot of people happy because a lot of people said, oh, they have a baby and it's a girl. That's good. There's sunshine in their life. And Taylor has brought sunshine in our life.
But the grief still exists.
I can turn it on like a dime, like it was yesterday. I can still hear her voice. I can still feel her.
She wishes, of course, that her sister would have gotten the chance to know her children.
I really think that she could have encouraged them to be this, that. She could have embraced them. And I think that they would have really learned so much from her, because I truly think that she would have had a lot to give to them. And that's just really sad. That hurts a lot that she's gone.
Despite not having Paulus in person, Leahy talks with her sister and tells her to watch over her kids.
We made a plan during life, after life. She's actually held up a lot of her end of the bargain because they've been in some situations that they've come out clean as a whistle, and she's come to them and been there for them, and I believe in her.
And although she'll always grieve her sister, Leahy embraces memories of Paulus every chance she gets.
When it's a full moon, I blow kisses to her because we both love full moons and sunsets.
We lived that vampire life for like 2 years. You know, many nights we say, hey man, let's just, okay, let's not even go to sleep. Let's just go to the beach. Let's just go hang. We go grab the ski.
That's Servando Carriega. He was one of Manny Taboada's close friends. The two met in South Florida when Carriega was 21. And boy, did they know how to have fun. They would bartend together and go to the beach. They'd even hang out listening to music from AC/DC's Back in Black album and songs by Van Halen. Taboada in particular was a big music fan. One of his favorite bands was Bon Jovi. I'm a cowboy.
Yeah, I remember he would play the guitar, drive me fucking crazy with Wanted Dead or Alive. He would hook up the guitar, my mixer, for this DJ stuff. If he come home before me, he was hooked onto that thing. He would start over, play it, play along with the electric guitar. He was taking classes.
The friends moved from Miami to Gainesville and lived together right before the murders happened. Carriega says Taboada loved to live in the moment. He was also a fighter and always kept moving forward.
We thought we were going to live forever. We raced cars. We went fast. We drank a lot, drove drunk. We weren't afraid of dying. There was no fear.
When he got the news, Carriega couldn't believe he lost his friend.
When I found out, I broke down. I got very angry. I kicked the door of my backyard through. I had to get out of my house.
He felt confused.
All this time, why? I couldn't reconcile. I would wake up in the middle of the night. I'd pace around. If I heard a noise, I'd walk out.
Carriega knew he had a choice. Fall into a depression or keep fighting.
I had to get my shit together. I had to get my life together. The party in that sense was over, right?
But he carries the grief of losing Taboada. He feels guilty for getting married and having kids. For living a life his friend didn't get the chance to experience.
You lock it up. But it does get out. That loss, I will never recover from. Never.
He still breaks down every once in a while and is haunted by one question.
My biggest fear is, would I be strong enough if I had a choice to go back to that night when he broke into that window through that door? Would I be knowing what I have ahead of me and what I would be giving up? Would I be courageous enough to go back and stand there and take my chances to save his life?
When he listens to the Billy Joel song, Only the Good Die Young, he relates. He says it's unfortunate, but true.
What a waste.
He thinks of Tabuada to this day.
Just anything. I see a family together. I mean, I see ourselves. I see pictures of ourselves, family pictures, me, my wife, the kids. I think, wow, it'd be nice to be able to have a picture of Manny and his family on that wall.
Cariaga and his wife named their firstborn son Manuel to honor his friend. And if he got the chance to see Tabuada again, he'd ask him what he's been up to.
God, I don't think we'd sleep for a week. We should talk a lot. Two dreamers.
Sonia Larson, Christy Powell, Krista Hoyt, Tracy Paulus, and Manny Tabuada are ingrained in the hearts of their loved ones. The family and friends of the victims will always be interconnected, forever tied by the grief and love they share for these five people. To Christy Powell's friend, Allison Emery, the focus of the 1990 murders should be on the victims.
There's always a lot of interest in this whole story because of the sensationalism of the crime and the person who committed it. And that's always often what people are interested in. But what gets lost in all that is the five beautiful young lives that were taken in the blink of an eye, and all of the families that were left behind, and all of the promise and all of the possibility that those five young people had was literally just stolen from them.
And as we close this episode, you'll hear the voice of UF President John Lombardi calling out the names of these five students.
Sonia Jane Larson.
The artist.
Christina Patricia Powell.
The beacon of light.
Krista Lee Hoyt.
The glowworm.
Tracy Inez Paulus.
The sweetheart.
And Manuel Ricardo Tabuada.
The fighter. And how did the killer get brought to justice? We heard from those responsible.
We talked about it. My position was Danny loves attention. He was a narcissist. So we took the video and Danny loved it. And he played to it.
That's next time on 4 Days, 5 Murders. You've been listening to 4 Days, 5 Murders, a production of the Innovation News Center at the University of Florida's College of Journalism and Communications. I'm your host, Camille Ruspis. This episode was reported and edited by Malia Leiden. Our producers are Josh Williams and Katie Heisen. Executive producers are Moni Basu and Ryan Vasquez. And thank you to the friends and families of the victims who shared their stories with us.